Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. While the federal eviction moratorium put in place during the pandemic is in process to be extended from the end of January to the end of March, evictions still do occur in Tulsa County, and it's up to the renter to know their rights and ask for the federal moratorium protections. Eventually, though, that protection will end, and housing right advocates fear an avalanche of evictions will soon follow. Here in Tulsa, which prior to the pandemic had the 11th highest eviction rate in the country, the process of eviction greatly favors the landlord. Nearly all landlords are represented by attorneys. And the process is not usually played out in a courtroom before a judge, but negotiated in hallways between the tenant and, more often than not, the landlord's counsel. Some pro bono representation is available to tenants, but after studying eviction procedures for some time, the clinical staff and law students of the Terry West Legal Clinic at the University of Tulsa College of Law are advocating for tenants to have a right to counsel when facing eviction. Their report was released last week in a document titled Leveling the Playing Field, which examined eviction policy, statistics, and outlines the legal, social, and cost issues associated with a right to counsel program. I'm joined by Professor Ronnie Amit, an assistant clinical professor of law at the TU Law School and director of the Terry West Legal Clinic. Professor Amit, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
This new report, Leveling the Playing Field, follows up on the report your clinic released this past summer that examined how evictions are actually conducted in Tulsa County and how tenants are often uninformed of their rights in the proceedings and not informed often of there is the availability of some pro bono representation in these proceedings, but it's not made available to them. And it's really an unlevel playing field. That was sort of what the first report looked at, just sort of the state of how evictions are taking place in Tulsa County. Now, this report says tenants should have legal representation during this process of eviction. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, as you said, we previously looked at what was going on at the court process in eviction court. And so this report really built on that, looking at what was going on in court and really some of the due process implications of that. Evictions are taking place in small claims court, and that small claims court has this idea that it's a place where people can go and resolve their differences very often without lawyers. But what's happened with evictions is it has become this uneven playing field where you have, as you said, tenants with very little understanding of their legal rights or of the legal system going up against lawyers who have this huge information advantage and who are there every day. Also, there's this idea that small claims court is for low stakes events, but evictions are really not low stakes. So some of what we wanted to look at are beyond the due process implications and the legal implications, what really are the effects of evictions on individuals and on the communities, and what would the effect be of having a right to counsel program?
Now, that due process system, within the small claims system, there is still, I guess, a belief and I don't know how you would say it. It's just sort of a working method of the idea that, you know, let's say we're two parties, one is aggrieved. We come and we work out that agreement either with the judge or between the two of us, or he'll send us out in the lobby to talk about, you know, our dispute and see if we can work that out. With eviction, where you have one side almost always represented by counsel, that becomes a very coerced negotiation, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. And if you look at really the core principles of due process, one is a fair and impartial tribunal, and the outcomes in eviction proceedings really heavily favor landlords, and tenants almost never get judgments in their favor. Our previous report analyzed almost 1,400 cases and saw that only two got judgments for tenants. So that suggests really that the outcomes are skewed, and the lack of representation is a big part of that. And the other really core principle is the opportunity to be heard and the opportunity for individuals to be able to raise their legal defenses and avoid unlawful evictions. And again, without representation, tenants aren't really able to do that because, as you said, most eviction hearings don't actually involve trials. They do rely on these informal hallway negotiations, and individuals don't really know their rights. And because you have these really high numbers of evictions on the docket, the court's ability to function really very much rests on the fact that individuals either aren't showing up or that they are showing up, but they don't know how to exercise their rights when they do show up.
You know, I think there's probably a great misunderstanding of actually what the eviction proceeding is like for people who have never either been attended in those proceedings or a landlord. As you mentioned, you know, most of the cases are not settled before a judge. They're settled in the hallway between often the landlord or his lawyer and the tenant.
That's true. It's really very much, if you think about it, when you have something like 70 cases on the docket, there's no way, in Tulsa County, there's one judge who hears all eviction proceedings. So there's no way for a single judge to be able to hear 70 cases in one afternoon. So it really very heavily relies on people just going out and talking to their landlord, or more often their landlord attorney, and being forced to sign these agreements, or not forced, or being really convinced to sign these agreements that very often they don't understand. And they may have defenses to their eviction in some of these cases, but they're not aware of them.
Now, there are organizations that do provide some pro bono representation, but what I found interesting from the last report, and I think this report also makes plain, is that the whole system is designed to maybe ignore that representation that's available and not make it known to any tenant that steps into eviction, small claims court.
Yeah, I think it's in the previous system, pre-COVID, it wasn't always clear to individuals who the different lawyers were, and sometimes they were being sent out to talk to the landlord attorney, and they wouldn't necessarily understand that that attorney was representing the landlord and didn't have their interests in mind. And individuals didn't always recognize the value of an attorney, again, because they don't understand the system, they don't understand their rights, so they think, well, they've been called into court because they owe this money, so there's nothing they can do, and that's not always true. If in COVID times, it's a little different because the court has been moved to the Juvenile Justice Center. There's really restrictions on people going in, and how people can access those lawyers now is a little more difficult just because of the restrictions on movement there. But the lawyers are still there, and they are still assisting tenants at eviction court.
Now, one of the things this report points out is there's a huge difference in how eviction plays out for a tenant with representation versus without. I think I read, I think it was like one without counsel is about 2 to 1 more likely to be evicted from the property where they domicile without counsel, as opposed to with. That is a huge difference.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that the lawyer may not always be able to stop the eviction, but that doesn't mean the lawyer can't play a huge role, particularly in getting the tenant more time. Very often, without a lawyer, a tenant will have to be out very quickly. That could even be within 48 hours. They won't have time to take all their belongings with them or to find alternate housing. A lawyer can often negotiate more time so that when they do leave their housing, it's somewhat less traumatic for them. Also, money judgments that landlords received were on average $800 more for tenants who did not have representation.
Hmm. One of the items you document is the cost of an eviction, and that cost goes well beyond simply the cost to tenant or landlord. What are the true costs of an eviction as far as to the community, to various institutions, to the neighborhood in which the tenant lived? Can you give us an example of some of the cost of an average eviction?
Well, we haven't had a costing study in Tulsa, mm-hmm. And that's one of the things our report recommends is doing such a costing study. There have been costing studies done in other cities, and pretty much across the board, every time there's been a costing study, they found that these right to counsel programs end up saving cities money, and that is because of the high cost of eviction. So we know that losing one's housing has long-term effects on individuals, including children. It affects their physical health, their mental health, their education, and their career prospects, their earning potential, and that all has repercussions within their communities and within their cities. When you have people displaced from their neighborhood, you lose this sort of social cohesion and these neighborhood ties that often the neighborhood and the community would step in and help people in their communities. And now when those people are displaced, they're forced to rely much more on public services. And you see increased costs that arise from homelessness, that arise from mental health needs, and really increased costs of having people rely more on public resources. We know there are links between evictions and employment stability. So people often, once they lose their home, that may lead to them also losing their job. And so you'll see increased reliance on unemployment. We'll see increased needs for foster care. So there's all sorts of ways in which an eviction affects not just the individual or the family, but really affects the broader community.
My guest today is Professor Ronnie Amit, the Assistant Clinical Professor of Law and Director of the Terry West Legal Clinic at the University of Tulsa College of Law. The Legal Clinic recently put out a new report titled Leveling the Playing Field, which recommends that tenants facing eviction should have the same right of counsel that you see in many other court proceedings, certainly on the criminal side. And the idea of leveling the playing field because landlords are represented by attorneys and most often tenants aren't. And I think one of the things that comes out of this is the fact that many tenants never show up in court. I think it's up to 60% of tenants just don't bother to show up. We really don't know why that is, but I'm assuming that is because they feel like there's no way they can get a fair shake in court. They don't have representation. Do we know what happens to these tenants that don't show up in court? We know what happens. There's a default judgment against them.
Right. I mean, we don't know in concrete terms because it's very hard to get in touch with these people and follow up, particularly when they're no longer at their address. But we can certainly imagine that they are, because they got these default judgments, their evictions are executed probably fairly quickly. So they're displaced. In many cases, they're probably not able to take all of their belongings with them. So they lose a lot of their possessions and they either move in with family or in some cases they may be homeless, or once they have an eviction on their record, they're really limited in where they can go. So even if they are able to obtain new housing, very often that's substandard housing that has a lot of non-habitability problems, problems with living conditions, and probably they're paying higher rents. I think there's this assumption that people are paying lower rents for these properties, but we know research that others have done show that that's not always the case. And then, again, as I mentioned, once they're displaced, children may be displaced from schools. Their attendance may drop off. If they're forced to move farther from their jobs, individuals may then end up losing their jobs because it's much harder for them to make it to work. So there are all sorts of effects from these evictions.
One of the things your report, the last report, pointed out, and this report also sort of repeats it, is the fact that here in Tulsa, we have a lot of what you call serial evictors. They file hundreds of evictions in a year, and many of them are repeat evictions against a same individual. And it suggests that basically eviction filings are not designed to have, you know, an unresolvable conflict between tenant and a landlord, oftentimes it's just a pressure method to get late rent or fees paid. Is there some need for reform? Would representation help reduce that caseload that the court is seeing?
Yeah, I think representation could help in a few ways. I think right now, the uneven playing field that we have really creates an incentive for landlords to file evictions because landlords know that in many cases they can get a default judgment because of the high no-show rate. And in those cases, they won't necessarily have to prove their case. They don't really have to provide evidence. If the tenant doesn't show up, there's no one there to challenge the case. Representation could also reduce the incentive for landlords to do the process you described, engage in that process of really using eviction filings as a stick to get tenants to really extract money from tenants and to get tenants to pay and to pay late fees and all sorts of fees that are tacked onto their rent payment. And again, it's because there's no one on the other side to challenge that. So that's where representation could really come in and level the playing field.
I think the report looks at maybe some of the places where there are representation offered in eviction proceedings. How does that work for the community? Is it a burden to taxpayers? Is it does it work out better for landlords as well as tenants?
Yeah, so we looked at three programs in New York City, San Francisco, and Newark, New Jersey. And the Newark and the San Francisco programs are relatively new, so there's not as much data as there is on New York. But what all the costing estimates have found is that there are initial outlays of money that are required to set up these programs, but they end up paying for themselves because of all of the savings that you get from the community. And I think here also it's important to distinguish when we talk about landlords, it's important to distinguish what kind of landlords we're talking about. So the serial evictors that you mentioned, those are more what we call the big box landlords who own a lot of properties. Very often they may be located out of state and their incentive structures are different. And that's why they've found a model where they think they can benefit. I think the calculations are very different for the mom and pop landlords, the people who own maybe a single property or a couple properties. And in many cases, they may not want to evict their tenant, but they need to cover their mortgage, and so they don't see an alternative. And that's where I think these right to counsel programs can really come in and help the landlords as well as the tenants to negotiate a workable solution. And it's not, I mean, in Tulsa, it's not prohibitively expensive, but it's not without any cost to file an eviction in court, particularly for these smaller landlords. And so that's also where representation can come in and really alleviate some of those costs.
For the mom and pop landlord, is it about maybe structuring a payment system where, yes, a tenant is in arrears, but you slowly but surely sort of cover the arrears over the next few months? Is it sort of a structured payment plan? Is that one of the solutions?
That is one of the solutions. And now in COVID times, there's a lot of rental assistance that's available that lawyers can help the tenants apply for. I think even under the newest round, landlords can apply for it on behalf of their tenants. So it's also helping them access funds that are available. It's providing perhaps mediation that could help resolve some of these differences. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that representation can help not only tenants, but can help landlords who aren't just engaging in these evictions as a money-making mechanism.
Well, there have been a number of studies on access to counsel programs, and I think several of them have found really quantifiable costs that a right to counsel program would reduce. What are some of those costs?
So I think some of the big costs are costs that are spent on public safety measures, because when you have higher homelessness populations, then there's often we see higher policing that accompanies that. The cost of increased unemployment claims, the cost of when you have increased evictions, then you have more substandard housing. So there's some costs around enforcing that. There's increased mental health costs. There's increased costs in emergency rooms when you have higher levels of displaced populations, because often homeless populations will end up in those emergency rooms. So there's all sorts of ways that these costs manifest.
My guest today is Professor Ronnie Amit. She is an assistant clinical professor of law and director of the Terry West Legal Clinic, the University of Tulsa College of Law. The clinic has released a new report, Leveling the Playing Field, which urges counsel in eviction proceedings. And I think there's probably a lot of misinformation on what is happening in Tulsa County and around the country with evictions today because of the eviction moratorium. How is it working? Are evictions being stayed now, or are evictions still occurring from time to time?
Well, the answer is really both are happening. The eviction moratorium is really effective under certain conditions. So the moratorium covers evictions for unpaid rent. And in that sense, we've seen it be very successful in staying evictions where people are behind on their rent. What it doesn't cover is evictions for other reasons. So some sort of violation of the lease or some sort of, or, you know, saying that the tenant has engaged in criminal activity or threat to public safety. And what we're seeing in some cases is landlords trying to circumvent the moratorium by filing evictions for other causes. And in that respect, there has been some success. The other issue is really just making people aware of this moratorium. I think a lot of tenants don't know that this protection exists, and tenants are getting really behind on their rent. And so they may just, recognizing that they owe all this money, they may just decide to move out on their own because they don't think that there's an alternative or they aren't aware of this protection.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I really had was, you know, the moratorium is at the end product of the eviction process. I assume notices are still being filed to tenants, correct?
Yes, in some cases, eviction notices are still being filed. And then you get into this problem of if people show up to court, then there are attorneys there from legal aid, and they're making sure that people know about this moratorium, and they're helping people do the declaration if they meet the criteria. But as we mentioned, the no-show rate is about 65%. So that's a large population that may be unaware of this protection and may then wind up with default judgments. The moratorium, the requirement is that the tenant give the declaration to the landlord. So there's no requirement that the tenant give the declaration to the court. Unfortunately, the only way the court will be aware of the fact that the tenant has filed this declaration is if the tenant shows up for their eviction hearing.
How has the COVID-19 situation and all the distancing and everything affected the ability of tenants to understand their rights under the moratorium and in eviction proceedings? Has it changed that significantly?
I think it's made it more difficult to reach these populations who are in need of assistance, particularly because right now so much of what we're doing relies on remote access, and so nothing is in person, so it's either by phone or over the internet, over Zoom or something. And what we know is that one of the precursors to evictions is people unable to pay their utilities, which may include internet or electricity. So they may not have TV. They may not be aware of these protections. So it's just an extra, it's an added barrier really to reaching these populations who are most in need of assistance.
Let me ask you, what's been the reaction so far to the report? It came out earlier this month. Has there been any sort of momentum from the report, any reaction to the report?
Well, the report unfortunately came out the same day as the impeachment hearing, so that overshadowed its publicity a little bit. But there was some movement prior to the report in Tulsa City Council to initiate an access to counsel program or to support or look into an access to counsel program. There was a resolution. So we're hoping that this report can be used to leverage some of that and some of that momentum. And we've, you know, we've discussed it with a few different advocates on this issue. So it's slow but steady progress, hopefully, and really just making people aware of this issue.
Right now, the eviction moratorium is still in effect. Once, whenever that date may be, whether it's at the end of this month or a few months from now, what is likely to happen to the docket here in Tulsa County?
So that is a great question that I think a lot of people are very worried about. Because the one thing to keep in mind with the eviction moratorium is that it didn't make all of this rent that is owed go away. It just put it on hold. So what you're going to see when the moratorium is lifted is people who owe significant amounts of back rent. And I think you're going to see a rush from landlords to get those tenants out in some cases. And there are, I will say, there is rental assistance, and there's going to be a new wave of rental assistance because, you know, I think everybody recognizes that this is hard on landlords as well as on tenants. So when a tenant can't pay their rent, the landlord may not be able to pay their mortgage. So it's really important that this rental assistance be part of the process. So hopefully we can get that rental assistance out and get some of these landlords paid. But I think there is a big concern that you're going to see a wave of evictions as soon as the moratorium is lifted.
Well, Professor Amit, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ronnie Amit is an assistant clinical professor of law at the University of Tulsa College of Law and director of the law school's Terry West Civil Legal Clinic. The legal clinic released a report recently recommending that tenants facing eviction should have the same right of counsel that criminal defendants have. Titled Leveling the Playing Field, it's available for viewing at the Legal Clinic's webpage at law.utulsa.edu. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Please stay safe out there, and thanks for listening.